Hello, everybody. This is Mike Snyder with you again for another edition of Suburban Cincy, where we review news items as reported in the pages of publications that specialize in more local and the sections of the papers looking for some local and interest, stories of wide interest. And we're going to be starting with the Cincinnati Enquirer, the Wednesday, August 14th edition, then turn our attention to the North Suburban area with some material from a couple of editions of the Journal News out of Hamilton, covers Butler County and that North Suburban area. But let's start with the Cincinnati Enquirer, new Urban League leader coming from Denver. And there's a photograph here of the gentleman who is indicated in the story. The Urban League of Greater Southwestern Ohio, based in Avondale, has a new president and chief executive. Eddie L. Cohen, and it's K-O-E-N, the spelling of his last name, most recently chief impact officer for United Way of Denver, will start at the local league September 30th. He replaces Donna Jones Baker, who retired earlier this year because of health reasons. Chera Fisher Jackson, executive director of the Urban League of Greater Southwest Ohio, was the league's interim president and CEO. Eddie's business acumen, his passion for education, equity, and criminal justice reform, along with key skills in conflict resolution, donor relations, and understanding of grassroots strategies, made him an ideal fit for our organization, said Alandis Powell, chair of the local league. The Urban League serves Greater Cincinnati and Greater Dayton with job preparation and education programs designed to create economic and personal self-sufficiency. The Cincinnati-Dayton League conducted a national search. Cohen is expected to be in Cincinnati for the local league's gala and fundraiser. The affiliate here is marking its 70th anniversary with a presentation of its Journey Awards at the annual event at the Duke Energy Convention Center. Cohen, a Chicago native whose family has roots in Alabama, worked previously as managing partner for CDM Ventures, a private equity firm based in Washington, D.C., that focuses on crowd investments, acquires and advises firms that are either managed by or benefit under served populations. He was also chief of staff for Denver Public Schools, a state policy advisor for HCM Strategists, and the founding regional executive director for Denver-based College Track, a multi-state nonprofit organization that removes barriers that prevent underrepresented students from earning college degrees. He is a past member of the Board of Governors of the National Bar Association and Board of Directors for Urban League of Metro Denver. Cohen also served as vice chair of the Board of Trustees for the Denver Foundation, an $820 million community foundation, and chaired its work around racial equity. And it's also possible, by the way, the pronunciation may be Keen, K-O-E-N. So I'll have to wait until I hear that pronounced over the radio or TV. But welcome to Mr. Cohen or Keen. Frisch's selling merchandise online now. There's a photograph showing a gentleman and a lady, young lady, young man, with the guy has a T-shirt showing the big boy, a headshot of big boy in four squares that make up a larger square. And the young woman has a T-shirt and a baseball cap. The T-shirt says big boy and brawny lads, buddy boy and Swiss Miss. So here's the story. Frisch is selling merchandise online now. If Frisch's is your favorite thing, why not broadcast it to the world with your wardrobe? Frisch's Big Boy just launched an online merchandise store of T-shirts, hats, jackets, and accessories for all ages. Every baby in your life needs the branded bib, or get one for yourself to catch that hot fudge drip. With online availability of our merchandise, fans of Frisch's Big Boy from around the region, the nation, and the world can now wear their love for our iconic mascot anytime and anywhere, said Todd Napier, Vice President of Marketing for Frisch's Big Boy, in a press release. To get your own Frisch's Big Boy swag, go online to http://bit.ly/Frisch's swag. So it's FRISCHS. That's Frisch's, and then the swag, SWAG. So, well, maybe we'll see a lot of those T-shirts and ball caps around town pretty soon. Well, here's another business-related item. Whole Foods Market opens in Kenwood, and there's a photograph here showing the front of the building. Here's the story. Whole Foods Market has opened its new 38,000-square-foot Kenwood store, its third store in the Cincinnati area, located at 5901 East Galbraith Road. In addition to fresh produce, seafood, meats, and ready-to-eat meals, the store offers hundreds of organic products from beverages to body care. The bakery department offers an array of fresh-baked breads, pastries, and cakes, and a full-service butcher department sells in-house made sausages and fresh meat cuts. The specialty food section has more than 200 cheeses, including locally sourced options and a self-serve olive and antipasti bar. The store also carries a wide variety of foods that meet vegan and other special dietary requirements, and many of the products are from local suppliers. The Kenwood store, which will employ about 100 full and part-time workers, will be open from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily. Whole Foods has two other stores in the Cincinnati area, in Mason, Deerfield Township, and Norwood. And another new store item, new women's apparel store planned for Carew Tower. The owner of Hellman Clothiers plans to open a new women's apparel store across the hall from his men's store in downtown's Carew Tower Arcade. Chuck Hellman, who also owns Blaine's Fine Men's Apparel in Montgomery, told the Inquirer he plans to open a high-end women's store by mid-October. That would be about a year after he opened Hellman Clothiers in a 3,000-square-foot space directly across from Saks Fifth Avenue on the Race Street side of the Carew Tower. Hellman, formerly the New York-based CEO of luxury brand Robert Graham, didn't provide further details, but his planned expansion is an indication that his boutique retail business is flourishing in the wake of some big-time retail losses for downtown. Downtown retailers Brooks Brothers, TJ Maxx, and Joseph A. Bank have all closed up shop in recent years, and Macy's decision to close last year left Saks Fifth Avenue as the only remaining downtown department store. And another item, Allegiant adds nonstop flight from Cincinnati to Florida. Allegiant is adding a new nonstop flight from Cincinnati Northern Kentucky International Airport to West Palm Beach, Florida. The new flight kicks off November 25th. Some fares will start as low as $49 one way, but those tickets are limited and must be purchased by today, today being Wednesday, August 14th. The new year-round route will run twice weekly. We're excited to add another sensational destination to our service in Cincinnati with this new service to Palm Beach International, Drew Wells, Allegiant's Vice President of Planning and Revenue, said in a news release. We're certain that area travelers will love having a convenient, affordable option to get to the Sunshine State. With West Palm Beach, Allegiant will serve 21 cities from CVG. The airline is also increasing service to Sarasota-Bradenton International Airport in Florida this winter. Starting in November, service will increase from 3 times to 5 times weekly. And here's just an item of general interest from the Census Bureau. Census workers to launch verification of addresses. Starting this month, an army of 40,000 U.S. Census Bureau workers equipped with laptops will fan out to neighborhoods around the country to verify and update addresses in preparation for the largest headcount in United States history next spring. The verification of addresses is the most labor-intensive component of the Bureau's preparations this year for the 2020 count. The workers, known as listers, will cover about a third of the nation's physical area. The Census Bureau conducts a count of every U.S. resident every 10 years. We're moving later this month into the full-fledged national canvassing effort, said Stephen Dillingham, director of the U.S. Census Bureau. The start of the address verifying comes a month after President Donald Trump announced his administration would no longer seek to add a citizenship question to the 2020 census questionnaire. Civil rights groups still worry that the legal fight over the question will cause immigrants and others to hesitate filling out their census forms. The census results are used to distribute federal funds and decide how many U.S. representatives each state gets. The method used by census workers is changing this year. In years past, listers walked every block of every street in the nation to make sure the physical addresses matched what was on their lists. For this year's headcount, workers are verifying around two-thirds of the addresses from their office computers. Using aerial imagery, workers are looking for blocks where there has been significant growth or decline, where there are multiple instances of an address, or when an address is missing. They will then send listers to those blocks to double-check for accuracy or get updated information. Census officials estimate the new method will save time and money. It reduces the workload of employees in the field by about two-thirds and requires less than a third of the listers who were used in the 2010 count, according to the Bureau. The agency's Office of Inspector General, though, recently questioned the accuracy of the new method. In a test run last year in Rhode Island, in-office results that showed a block didn't need a physical check by a lister failed to match what was actually in the field for more than 60% of the blocks tested, according to an Inspector General's report from last February. This indicates that in-office address canvassing is yielding incorrect results, or at the very least, results that are inconsistent with in-field address canvassing, the report said. Although the Bureau aims to reduce the number of housing units that require in-field verification, address data quality will be sacrificed if in-office address canvassing is not yielding accurate results. The Census Bureau strongly disagreed with the Inspector General's methodology for calculating the error rate for the in-office results, saying it had overstated the errors. And let's turn our attention now to that North Suburban area with some stories from the Journal News. Story out of Hamilton, and there are two photographs here. Man killed in crash, a hero to everybody, is the headline of the story. Former Green Berets motorcycle struck SUV on Ohio 4 last week. And the two photographs show a current photograph of an elderly man with a, this shows the headshots, elderly man with a long white beard, eyeglasses, a baseball cap that looks like it has military wording on it. And then to the right, the same man but as a younger person, who is in the military, so he, again, the headshot, but he is has his Army helmet on and looks to be in his perhaps late teens, early 20s. And here's the caption of those photos. Ronald S. Boyd, 59, of Hamilton, was a decorated Army Green Beret. He was killed Wednesday in a motorcycle accident on Ohio 4 in Butler County. And here's the story. A decorated Army veteran and Hamilton man who played Santa Claus is being remembered for the way he treated people. Ronald S. Boyd, 59, was killed Wednesday when his motorcycle struck the back of an SUV on Ohio 4, a couple blocks south of Ohio 129. He was a hero to everybody, said Cassandra Boyd, 26, one of his five children. He helped everybody and anybody. If you called him, he'd stop, drop, and help family or stranger. He was all about his family. Boyd was a truck driver and, in the last 5 years, started playing Santa Claus after his beard turned white, his daughter said. He loved to see the faces light up on the kids, she said. When asked what lesson she learned from her father, she said, "Tomorrow is never promised." Ironic, right? He was a veteran of the U.S. Army and was a member of the 82nd Airborne and a Green Beret with the Special Forces. His distinguished military service decorations included Parachutist Badge, Rifle Marksman, Hand Grenade Expert Badge, Expert Infantry Badge, and Combat Infantry Badge. His visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday. That would be Thursday, August 15th. At Webster Funeral Home, 3080 Homeward Way, Fairfield. The funeral starts at 11 a.m. with Pastor Ron Smith officiating. Burial will follow with full military honors in Dayton National Cemetery. Cassandra Boyd said the family is inviting all motorcyclists to ride with the funeral procession from the funeral home to the cemetery. Boyd is survived by his wife of more than 27 years, Nancy Boyd, children Ronald Boyd Jr., Cassandra Boyd, John Boyd, Robert Bales, and Ryan Bales, father, Frank Shirley Higby Boyd, grandchildren April Ashdown and Autumn Boyd, brothers Robert and Debbie, with wife Debbie Boyd, William, wife Brenda Boyd, and Richard, wife Dee Dee Boyd. And best wishes and condolences to the Boyd family. Casual Pint, opening soon in downtown Hamilton. And there's a photograph here showing the frontage of the Casual Pint. We see the sign. It's on a brick building with some large windows. And we see somebody on the inside on a ladder doing some inside work. And here's the caption of that photo. Greg Hacker of Hamilton, who works for Duff Carpentry, installs a sign inside a window at the Casual Pint, a new bar about to open in Hamilton's downtown area. And the subhead, co-owner, encouraged by a crop of new businesses setting up downtown. And here's the story. The Casual Pint Hamilton is scheduled to hold its grand opening later this month. And to co-owner Anne Marie Cilley, that's C-I-L-L-E-Y, or the reason for its downtown Hamilton location is obvious. "Why not?" she said. "Look at what's going on around us." She noted other new businesses nearby, including neighbors Tano Bistro, Municipal Brew Works, and North Second Tap and Bottle Shop, as well as the award-winning Markham Park with its River's Edge Amphitheater. The business is located in the Markham, a mixed-use complex that recently welcomed Revive Salon, and the second location of award-winning Tano Bistro, whose original location is in Loveland. "The Casual Pint is a unique blend of three things," said Cilley, who owns it with her husband Dan Hancock. "It's premium yet relaxed and welcoming environment to gather with friends and family for great beer and food, a wide variety of draft and packaged craft beer, plus cider and wine to enjoy on-site or to take home, and a very knowledgeable and friendly staff that creates a very fun beer discovery experience. The new 2,500-square-foot business will seat 100 people inside and outside and have 10 to 12 beer tenders and cooks on staff. It has 36 taps, including one for the gas that will be used to can beers one by one in crowlers on site for people wanting to take home brews that will last longer than those that can be kept in gas bottle growlers. Casual Pint will offer giveaways starting at 4 p.m. August 23rd, including special items for the first 50 through the door, plus raffles and prizes. Hours are 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Mondays to Thursdays, 11 a.m. to midnight Fridays and Saturdays, and noon to 8 p.m. Sundays. Cilley said she enjoys Hamilton's history and architecture, and honestly, we wanted to be part of what's happening in Hamilton now. "I don't even want to call it a revitalization anymore because I feel like we're already there. To see what has happened, was happening down here on Saturday, we were absolutely crawling with people," she said. "We had the Hamilton Flea, we had Ales for Tales and Animal Friends Humane Society fundraiser at Municipal Brew Works, and there was a 5K running race in the morning. The energy, that's what we were drawn to. Casual Pint will have at least one tap for a beer created by neighbor municipal Brew Works. Brew Works co-owner Scan Willingham called it nice that one of their products will be featured. Honestly, we welcome the neighbors, he said. I think it's going to bring a lot of business into the area, and we welcome them with open arms. It also will build a nice sense of community, he said. Casual Pint opening up sets a community destination for individuals coming up from Cincinnati, down from Dayton, and the whole area here. And there's another photograph showing the owner discussing his beers, and he's got a variety of the taps in the photograph here, and he also has a T-shirt that says Casual Pint. So best wishes to them for much business success. And here's a story from 7 Mile, which is north of Hamilton, if I'm not mistaken. Butler Pot Dispensary gets closer to opening. Bloom Medicinals may see work on 7 Mile store done this month. And there's a photograph here showing the building under construction. And Dateline 7 Mile, the new medical pot emporium under construction in 7 Mile is expected to open within weeks. The Main Street location of Bloom Medicinals, that's B-L-O-O-M, Bloom Medicinals, will be one of only two dispensaries in Butler County, the other being the Strawberry Fields shop on Main Street in Monroe. The Monroe store has not yet received its final state approval. The About Wellness Ohio store in Lebanon opened to a crowd of about 30 patients who lined up at the shopping center in May. 7 Mile Mayor Vivian Gorsuch said officials have been told by the business owners that their opening is imminent. Their plan is for the building to be finished by the end of August, she told the Journal News. After that happens, the pharmacy board has to approve it. Three parcels in the 400 block of Main Street sold for a total of $675,000 in December to 127OH LLC. Mark Hyde paid $45,000 for the parcels in 1994. The 7 Mile site will be one of five in the state for Bloom Medicinals. Patients will be able to select from a variety of medical cannabis oils, flower, tinctures, and transdermal patches that best fit your needs for your qualifying condition, the company wrote on its website. Educational events will be hosted for patients looking to learn more about our products, their benefits and uses allowed by the state of Ohio, as well as registration events for people looking to see if they qualify for medical marijuana. A 2016 law legalized marijuana for medicinal uses to treat 21 ailments, including cancer, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress disorder, or chronic pain. It allows multiple forms of medical marijuana to be sold, such as edibles, oils, patches, and vaporizing, but smoking and homegrown operations are not allowed. State records show 26 of the 56 provisional dispensary license holders have received certificates of operation from the State of Pharmacy Board as of August 8th. The 7 Mile location will need a Pharmacy Board inspection and certificate before it can open. Valerie Charms Mason, the community outreach and patient consultant at Bloom Medicinals' Painesville Township location, said she didn't have any information about 7 Mile, but her store opened May 30th. She said she had a patient call in who said he hadn't slept in 10 years, but he did the night of his visit to their shop. "We've been busy. It's been fabulous. There's always room for more patients, obviously. But we've been plenty busy," she said. "We've exceeded our sales goals, so that was a beautiful thing. And we're having a lot of patients with a lot of success. It's really a tremendously rewarding experience." As of August 4th, dispensaries statewide have sold $18 million worth of products to 30,284 patients. There are 53,082 patients registered to buy medical cannabis. 7 Mile Councilman Jack Young wasn't on council when the dispensary was locally approved and said he would have voted no. But he did vote in favor of dissolving the temporary moratorium last September so Bloom could get started building the new business. He said the rest of council approved the medical pot emporium because they thought they would rake in revenue. But as it turns out, aside from increased property taxes, the village will only collect some fees. After the ban was lifted, the council approved some regulations for the new business. There is a $500 fee for the license application, $15,000 for the license itself, and there is a $250 renewal fee, according to the new regulations the village approved September 10th. These fees are on top of the state's $5,000 application fee and $70,000 biannual certificate of operation fee. Young said perhaps the new business will benefit the rest of the village. If a lot of people come into the village, they might frequent our corner store up here. I don't know, he said, but added he isn't concerned. Droves of people will flock to town and cause traffic headaches. Gorsuch has said the village kept a ban in place against recreational weed. There is a ban against recreational marijuana and processing and cultivation. If that were to ever try to come to 7 Mile, even if the state allowed recreational, Gorsuch said, council has put on a ban, and it was voted on unanimously. Nicole Van Rensburg, CEO of 127 OHLLC, told the Journal News previously that the company chose 7 Mile because of its proximity to Ohio 127 and its central location in a region that includes Butler, Dark, and Preble counties. And we'll end by going to the local focus page. There's a great photograph here showing three individuals. There's a gentleman in a suit and a tie. There's a young woman in the middle, and there's a senior woman, an older middle-aged woman, I would say, to the right. And here is the caption, Book Scholarship Winner, Hazel Mack Wilson, Book Scholarship Winner, Ariana Mumford of Middletown High School and Miami University Center, stands with Dwight Wilson, which the gentleman, who provided the scholarship in honor of his mother, and Dr. Celeste Diedlich Davis of 3R Development. So congratulations to Ariana Mumford. Okay, we've got a story out of Middletown, Verity Traditions, Miami University Regionals. Verity Traditions continues at 6 p.m. August 28th in Verity Lodge on the Middletown campus with a special presentation by the Smith Library of Regional History entitled A College Town During World War I. The Great War in Europe had an impact on Oxford even before the U.S. entered the war in 1917. For more information, call 513-727-3472 or email orthrm@miamioh.edu. Verity Lodge is located at 4200 North University Boulevard. And on that note, brings us to the end of another edition of Suburban Cincy. This is Mike Snyder. Good being with you this time. Look forward to being with you next time. Until then, bye for now.